Strategic Christian Services is pleased to present Worldview, part of the Strategic Beginning Series. This is Session 4, entitled Applicational Worldview, by Adam Peacock.
Well, it's a pleasure to be sharing with you again in this Strategic Beginnings Series. And the focus of this particular series is Worldview, and the title of this lesson is Applicational Worldview. I trust that by this point, as you're going through the Strategic Beginning series, that you'll be able to see the motives and the desires, our goals for this series is to expose you to a deeper understanding of worldview, to challenge you to embrace a deeper study of worldview, and to encourage you in that process with what lies ahead for you in terms of the impact you'll be able to make in the kingdom of God, the growth that will take place in your life as a Christian, as a result of developing a Christian worldview. Our goal for this series is not that you would become an expert. This really is an introductory series. And I say that at the beginning because when we're going to be dealing with the application and the applicational aspect of worldview, we're getting into areas that it takes quite a lot of study and practice to be able to really grow in these areas. And while we believe that this is going to be an effective introduction for you, by no means are we under the impression that you'll be an expert as a result of having gone through this series alone. And I trust that you will not consider yourself an expert just having gone through this series. Again, I want to encourage you, as we've done up until this point, to get books and read, to go to conferences or other things that deal with Christian worldview, perhaps our Strategic Life Training course that has a whole year devoted to developing Christian worldview. Those types of things are going to be very important for you to go to the next level where we're introducing and encouraging. Those will be the things that form and shape. And so I know that what we'll be touching on during this lesson will be significant and will be very helpful, but it will be far from comprehensive. And again, our desire is that you would come to a place of mastery in regards to these concepts and these topics. And our purpose here is to introduce you to them, but we would be disappointed if you stopped just at the introduction. That having been said, I'd like to ask you to turn with me to Proverbs 23, and we're going to be looking at verses 6 and 7 of Proverbs 23. This is what it says. Do not eat the bread of a selfish man, or desire his delicacies. For as he thinks within himself, so is he. Now, this is important, I think, that we look at both verse 6 and 7, because we don't want to take this verse out of context. That's very important. But even within the context of this verse, I think that this sentence, as a man thinks within his heart, so is he, not only applies to the selfish man, but really applies to people in general. As people think in their heart, that's what's going to come out of them. Or another way of saying it is that our heart choices, as we've talked about, our presuppositions will manifest themselves in our lives. They will be shown. Our internal agendas, our internal attitudes, they will manifest themselves in the way that we live, the way that we speak, in tangible ways for others to see. As we think in our hearts, so are we. This is not a new concept, particularly for parents who see all sorts of things come out of their kids, and an attitude takes root in a child's heart, especially because they don't have the same defense mechanisms and same social pressures that we developed as we grow older. And so those things just come right out, and you can see what's going on in the heart very clearly in a child as they're growing up and the way that they respond to situations and issues. And as we grow older, we do develop kind of an awareness of the environment around us that sometimes has us suppress those things. But the bottom line is, over time, especially to those who have eyes to see, it's very clear that our faith choices, our internal heart choices and heart ideas will manifest themselves. As we think in our hearts, so we will manifest, or we will express to the world our heart ideas. And in that context, I think it's very clear to us that ideas have consequences. Those ideas that you dwell upon, those ideas that you hold inside, will have consequences, not only in the way that you think, but in the way that you act. And in looking at that verse, I believe it gives us a good introduction to this lesson on the applicational aspect of worldview. Now, we're talking about worldview in three levels. These aren't necessarily the only ways to categorize worldview, but we think that there are three effective ways in the context of getting a broad understanding of what worldview is all about. And those three levels are the presuppositional level, the evidential level, and the applicational level. And so we're coming to that third level now. Again, in review, the presuppositional level deals with the foundations of worldview. Every worldview begins at the presuppositional level. That is the faith choice level. That is the heart thought level. That's where the foundations of our worldview begin. That's where what we really believe and what we really know and what we really put our faith in is determined at a heart level. The second level that we touched on is the evidential level. And that's where we integrate our heart choices, our heart beliefs with the world around us. And it's at the evidential level that we draw support for our beliefs. It's at the evidential level that we are challenged as to the validity of our beliefs. It's at the evidential level that we begin to incorporate other quote-unquote experts when we talk about panels of experts to really reinforce the things that we believe. And it's at this level that we usually have a lot of our discussion and debate as to the things that we put our faith in. And this is a very important level in regards to education. It's a very important level in regards to what we talk about in 1 Peter 3:15. In regards to being ready to make a defense for the hope that's within us. This deals with apologetics. It deals with the things that we draw from our studies in mathematics and science and history and all those sorts of things. The evidential level is extremely important to the grounding of a worldview and to the testing of a worldview. And I'll just say this, until your worldview is tested, you're not really going to own it in the way that God desires for you to own it. And I believe that God allows even testing in our lives of our worldview so that we'll see what we truly believe versus what we think we should believe. And that's probably a series in itself. The third level is the applicational aspect of worldview. And this is where we get tangible expressions of our worldview. It's not just our thoughts and opinions, but it's what we do in our lives and what we do to try and solve the problems in particular that we face that tangibly reflect the thoughts of our hearts. Going back to Proverbs 23 there. And so I'd like to talk and begin to discuss applicational worldview. Now, as I just said, applicational worldview is the tangible expression of our worldview. These are the things that we do that as people see these actions, as people see these choices, as they see even these attitudes expressed, it's going to give them some idea of what our presuppositions are. In a very general example, the fact that you go to church on a weekly basis or attend a Bible study or that you read your Bible every day is a reflection of applicational worldview. That is, it's a reflection of the fact that someone looking at your life would believe that you believe in God or that you believe in a truth that you're searching for. It was the applicational aspect of Daniel's worldview that his enemies went after. They didn't go after the concept of his God. They went after the application of his worldview because they thought that was the best way that they could trap him, not in arguing with him about the validity of who God was, but in that area. And it was his conviction, Daniel and his friends' conviction about the nature of God that got them to choose the diet that they chose there in the beginning chapters of Daniel. And so we see that when we're looking at applicational worldview, we're simply talking about, okay, how do these things play out in the everyday aspect of our lives? Now, the applicational level of worldview, though it's a very tangible level, is really no different than presuppositional or evidential worldview in that it is determined by where you are in the worldview journey. As you remember, we're talking in this series, we're framing this series, this introduction to worldview, in the context of the journey that every person who's ever lived takes in regards to worldview. That is the journey from being influenced to being intercepted to being integrated to being an influencer. And as we've talked earlier, many people don't go through all those four steps. In fact, the majority of people, particularly in this day and age, never even get to being intercepted. And the vast majority of people never really come to a place of having an integrated, self-conscious worldview that's complete and connected. And at the applicational level, where people are is expressed. And so those who are influenced, who are products of the culture around them, who live life by default rather than by design, you're going to see that in the way that they live their lives. You're going to see that as you look at a day in their life, you will see that there's really nothing going on that talks of design in regards to their worldview. They're simply influenced in the things that they do and expressing the thoughts of the culture around them or the other influences, whatever they might be around them, in the way that they live. So that should be fairly straightforward to us because you see it every day and in the movies and television and those sorts of things. For someone who's intercepted, you're going to see in the applicational worldview, probably at as deep a level as any level, you'll see that dual-mindedness many times where they've been intercepted into one worldview but are still influenced by another. And you see this where people will go out and, you know, live as if there is no God on Friday nights and Saturday nights and then go to church and worship and profess like there is a God on Sunday morning. And that is an expression of someone who, again, assuming the best, has been intercepted, has had something very significant take place in their heart, but they're not integrated in their worldview, and so they're still taking on the thoughts and the influences of the world. They're not fully captured in regards to their thinking in their heart, and so there's a lot of confusion in them. Many times it's just rebellion, but sometimes, and maybe examples that are not so cut and dry, you'll see that it really is just an aspect of there needs to be a continued transformation, a continued integration of the tenets of the Christian worldview that need to really take a root in their heart. And again, when we're talking about this worldview journey, we're not just talking about Christians, but this would be the case with Marxists or humanists. I find this example with a lot of people who profess to not believe in God, but because they were raised in certain traditions or certain family experiences that did have underlying them a presupposition of God, they'll go after those things and accept those influences. An example would be going to church on Christmas or Easter for someone who doesn't believe in God. They do it culturally or socially, but still is a reflection of the influence that that has in their life. If they were truly integrated in their worldview, then they wouldn't participate in some of those sorts of things, at least not in the way that they do. You'll find that many atheists, or at least professing atheists, will pray. They see a value in prayer in some way, and what's really taking place there is that they're not integrated in their worldview at all, or they might be agnostic, but again, their prayer says something more than that. And so, in using those terms and those examples, I hope that it's clear that the applicational aspect of your worldview is going to reflect very clearly where you are in your journey. It's not the only way of seeing where you are in your journey, but it's definitely one that is very evident to people. Finally, if you're integrated with your worldview, then you are going to be one who lives by design. The pressures of the culture and of even of life around you are not going to shake the integrity of your worldview. And this is really a great way of seeing how integrated you are in your worldview, because God will often allow challenges. Life itself is full of problems and challenges that are designed to get us to compromise and to go with the flow, as it were. And someone with an integrated worldview, you're going to see just how integrated it is by at what level you break down under the pressure. And we're going to be talking about that throughout this lesson, but those who are integrated in their worldview are those who are not susceptible to the situations of life really changing the way that they live. They're going to react or respond in a way that they should and in an appropriate way, but that response is going to be appropriate to their presuppositions as well as appropriate to the situation. It's not going to simply be trying to get out from under the pressure. It's going to be addressing the situation from the context of your presuppositions or your heart choices. So if you need money very badly and you have an opportunity to steal money from the unsuspecting person whose wallet just dropped out on the floor below them, again, even if you don't know where your next dollar is going to come from, if you are someone who subscribes to the biblical Christian worldview, who believes that God is actively involved in your life and that God has actively prescribed judgment upon those who steal, then no matter how much pressure you're under to find money for your next meal or whatever your need might be, you will not resort to stealing to do that. Now, there are those who, if they had plenty of money, would not steal for others, or even if they had a little bit of money, would not steal. But in that place, you see under that pressure that they find ways to justify another perspective, and you see where there's a breakdown in the application of their worldview. And it really is in these types of situations that we are able to hold a mirror up to ourselves and see just how integrated we are in our worldview. Finally, in the last step of the worldview journey where we're talking about being an influencer, you're at a point now where not only are you integrated where you're not influenced yourself, but you're looking at effective ways to be an influence in the world around you. That is, where the person who is influenced is a product of the culture around you. Those who are integrated are no longer a product of the culture around you. You're a product of your worldview, and an influencer has gone from just being a product of their worldview versus a product of their culture to trying to be a prophetic voice to the culture around them. And that means that you're looking for ways to influence others towards an understanding of the Christian worldview. And really, as we've talked about, that you're trying to position them for conviction so that there could be a genuine change at the heart level in their lives. And again, we have such a great opportunity at the applicational level of worldview to be an influence, because problems really reveal what you really believe in. Under pressure, people revert to what they really know. You see this a lot where someone is in any type of a physical conflict, particularly if you're thinking about fighting and those sorts of things. One of the things you'll notice if you see much about fighting is when people get in a place where the attack on them is greater than they can cope with, they're going to go into a fetal position. They're going to curl in a ball, cover their head, and that is a natural human response. That's what we go to when we're under pressure that we can't deal with. You go back to that thing that is safe to you, and that's going to protect you. And a whole aspect of discipline and training, whether it's in athletics or music or business or speech or you name the discipline, is to train you to such a level that under pressure, your natural reaction will be the trained response versus the natural response. And that's why people drill and drill and drill over and over, so that that first response is going to be the response that you've trained versus the response that you naturally revert to. I trust that that's clear. The point of that train of thought is this: there's pressure in the world all around us, and as those who have both an integrated and an influencing perspective in our worldview, we have a great opportunity in the way that we respond to pressure and pressure situations where others would be overwhelmed because they're not integrated in their worldview. We can then be an influence and bring about godly solutions and godly change. And I hope it's clear from this series to this point that that really is our desire for what we believe you should take away from this. And it's really taken from our understanding of the scriptures that God has called us to be influencers in the world around us. That is, we're called to be both salt and light to the culture around us. And that means being an influence for God and for the things of God. So, that being the case, at the applicational level of worldview, you're going to still be dealing with the fact of where am I on this journey, or where are those I'm working with on this worldview journey. Another thing I want to say about the applicational worldview level is that it challenges us at a character level in a significant way. Now, that's not to say that at the heart presuppositional level or the evidential level, which again deals a lot with our thinking and our arguments and our processing of the world around us, it's not that those things don't reflect our character, but there's something about the applicational level that really challenges our character. And I'm so grateful for an opportunity to share about the applicational level, because many people that I've met, unfortunately, have a deep understanding of worldview issues and they've come to a place of integration, but because of their character, they really undercut their ability to be the type of influence I believe that God wants them to be. And I'd like to just follow this up by asking you to turn to a scripture that we've already mentioned earlier and you should be familiar with by this point. But there's an important aspect that I want to look at in this verse. And that is from, again, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. And it says this, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." And the aspect that I want to focus on as we're looking at this verse is this last statement, "yet with gentleness and reverence." See, as we're developing in worldview, many times we're developing in that ability to always be ready to give a defense for the hope that is in us. That is, to be able to explain what we believe and why we believe it to any person from any worldview or from any situation that would be asking us. And there's such a focus on, can I do that? Am I clear enough on what I believe and why I believe it, on what I don't believe and why I don't believe it, that whoever would ask me from whatever point of view, I'd be able to make a clear defense for my presuppositions, for my faith choices, for that hope that is in me. And there's such a focus on that and such a desire to be equipped in that way that many times we lose focus of the fact that Peter says there's a way to do this, and that is a way of gentleness and reverence. And when we're talking about the challenges of character in regards to applicational worldview, I think this is such an important thing for us to look at. One distinction that I would make in regards to this is the difference between being right and being righteous. And I don't know if you've thought of that distinction before, but when we talk about being right, we're talking about a focus on being correct. That is, having the truth and having things ordered in a right way. Okay, it's having the right thing. It's knowing the right thing and the right thing to say, the right answer, those sorts of things. When we talk about righteousness or being righteous, it is literally, as you look in the definition of the word, righteousness is not only doing the right thing, but doing it the right way. And I believe that's one of the things that Peter's really touching on here, is that as we're making a defense of the hope that is in us, as we're making this worldview and this apologetic response to those who would question us, we have to be aware of not just the right thing to say to their question, but to say it in the right way. Because how we present truth is much of a reflection of where we're at as the truth that we present in many ways. One of the things that you've heard said before probably is that people do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's another way of saying that we've got to be righteous, not just right. That is, we've not only need to know the right thing, do the right thing, but we need to do it in the right way. A tremendous scriptural example of this is taken in the Old Testament when David desires to bring the ark back to the city of God, to where it's supposed to be. And he puts the ark on a Philistine cart, and as they're bringing it up, the cart tips, a man reaches up to stabilize the ark, and he dies. And there's a tremendous, just a mourning that takes place over this, and the whole project stops. And, you know, what David desired to do was not a bad thing. The desire to bring the ark to the place where God designed it to be, that was not a bad thing that David desired. But it wasn't just desiring the right thing, it was needing to do it in the right way. And so David had to go back. He had to discover what was the right way that God had prescribed for the ark to be handled when it was moved. And then he tried again. And I thank God that David didn't give up, that he didn't feel sorry for himself, but that he found the right way. He made the changes that he needed to, and he grew in character and understanding as a result. And my challenge to you would be to respond in the way that David did. Where you've had the right answer, but it hasn't produced the fruit in the situation that you desired, or where you haven't got the feedback that maybe you should have gotten, that is, that you were proud of the way that you gave the right answer, but the response didn't really reflect someone who really heard the truth, then I would challenge you to go back and respond like David did and ask yourself, did I do this the right way? And that's where character is so important. We need to not only be right in our thinking, we need to be righteous in our thinking. Not only right in our application, but righteous in our application. That is, doing the right thing the right way. A second example of the challenge of character at the applicational level of worldview, I'd say, is in having wisdom in the way that we solve problems. That is, that we're effective in our solving problem from a wise perspective. And this word wisdom is a word that I absolutely love. In the Hebrew, it deals with skill at its root. And there's other aspects of the picture, but it deals with being skillful. That is, not only being able to do the right thing, but having done the right thing over and over enough and in the different nuances and different applications of a situation. So it's not just that you're capable of doing the right thing, but you're skillful at doing the right thing. And we see wisdom in Proverbs. You look at chapter 1, chapter 8, chapter 9. Wisdom is personified. And one of the things that you see in the personification of wisdom in these chapters is that wisdom is other-seeking. That is, it talks about wisdom going out onto the street corner. It's out where people are, and it is desiring the best for others. Wisdom is saying, you know, if you would listen to me, I went out, I called to you, and if you would have responded to me, I would have been able to help you. I would have been able to serve you in this situation. And there's something about our character that needs to be shaped in a way that we're wise in the way that we apply worldview. That is, that we're skillful because of practice, and that like wisdom, we're seeking another's benefit. We're other-seeking, and we're not being selfish in the way that we're applying worldview. One of the key distinctions in this, obviously, is we're talking about being other-seeking versus self-seeking. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes those with a integrated worldview who do not desire to be influencers with that, or who are not so concerned about that, don't necessarily apply their worldview with wisdom in regards to the way that wisdom's personified as being other-seeking. They're very much wrapped in their own world, and as long as they're safe and protected in the way that they're applying their worldview, they're happy. And I don't believe that that's what the scriptures reveal to us about the way that we're supposed to live, or the way that we're supposed to apply the truth of God and the things that we believe. And so we are to be other-seeking, I believe, scripturally. We're to be those who are, again, salt and light, influencing and other-seeking, seeking to benefit others as we're looking at wisdom. But there's also the case where those who are desiring to be an influence get into situations where they're other-seeking, and they are challenged because of the pressure of the situation and the carrots, as it were, that are put before them to compromise a true and integrous application of their worldview. And we talked about, under pressure, how integrated really are you in your worldview? And there are those throughout history who have been solid believers who, under pressure, particularly as they've desired to be helping others solve problems, particularly when we're talking about problems with groups of people, with cities and societal issues, and where they've got the influence to do that, where they really compromise the truth of God, they compromise the true faith in a desire to help others, and in fact, they don't help others at all because others do not grab a hold of the truth of God, and they're not really brought to a place of understanding the truth of God or reaping the benefits of the truth of God. They've simply compromised and found something that worked to get them out of the pressure of the moment. And even in being other-seeking, we can't be those that compromise. Compromise is not a reflection of wisdom. At least it's not a reflection of the wisdom that it talks about in James. It comes from above. It's a reflection of the wisdom of the world. And so we're not talking about compromise, but we are talking about compassion. Jesus is a great example of that. You talk about the section of scripture with the woman caught in adultery. Now, this was a situation where Jesus showed wisdom. That is, he showed skill in applying the law for the situation. And he did not compromise the law, but he showed compassion and wisdom in the way that he addressed the situation for the benefit of both those applying the judgment, because of a need for them to check their heart, their motives, their character, as well as the woman who was due for the judgment. There was a compassion that was showed for her there as well. And he did that with incredible wisdom, but without compromise. And so when we're looking at applicational worldview and we're looking at character issues, we really should have in our character a desire to grow in wisdom in our character, because I believe that wisdom and understanding and knowledge are aspects of character traits, as well as patience and understanding and endurance and those sorts of things. So wisdom in our character, and also that we would have a true and proper understanding of what it is to be skillful in applying our worldview to the pressure situations that we face or to the other opportunities to be an influence and a help to others. We need to do that with wisdom. We need to do it with compassion, but without compromise. Now, that being said, let's talk about the different areas, a couple different categories for where we make application to our worldview. Actually, I want to look at three, more than two. I want to look at three categories. And these are not the only categories. It's not the only way to break these categories down, but I think it is an effective way to look at it. Those three categories are the personal application of our worldview, the relational application of our worldview, and the societal application of our worldview. So let's talk first about the personal application of our worldview. How do I personally grow? Okay, Adam, you have been talking to me and others have been talking to me in this series about moving forward in this worldview journey. I want to move forward. I want to grow. I'm going to study more. But what are some good ways that I can begin to practice making application to my worldview? Well, I'm so glad you asked. The personal application of worldview, I would encourage you, this is the place to start the most. This is the place where you're able to really test your integration. And, you know, this is something where you can look at how you spend your time in a day and what it says, the confessions of your mouth. What are the confessions of your mouth about situations, about people, about God? What do those things reflect about your presuppositions? The way that you pray, what does how you pray reflect about your understanding of the nature of God, the nature of man, the nature of truth? Those sorts of things, I would begin just at looking at what you do, what you say, how you respond. But also, in regards to growing in worldview and worldview awareness, I would encourage you to do several things. One, I would encourage you to practice asking difficult questions. And ask these questions of yourself, because questions that you're not able to answer reflect an opportunity where you can know what you believe and why you believe it at a greater level. Another good place to begin to practice personal application of worldview is by reading the editorial sections of a newspaper. This is one of the things, as I'm working to help people grow in their understanding of worldview, this is one of the exercises that I quite enjoy doing, because the editorial sections of newspapers are not as concerned with appearing objective. And so while there is no objective communication, all communication comes out of the presuppositions of faith choices of those who are communicating. That is, the newspaper reporter who's reporting on a volcano eruption that, you know, causes extreme damage on an island, who is not a Christian, who does not hold to the Christian worldview, is going to make a much different report than the reporter who does subscribe to that Christian worldview. You're going to see, while they might have many of the same facts, you're going to see a different character or a different tone to that article based on the worldview that they hold. But at the editorial section, it's especially evident. And there's not a desire to mask those things because it is so wrapped up with people's opinion. And so I would encourage you, grab the editorial section of the paper and begin to try and identify what are this person's presuppositions. What can we deduce about what they believe about the nature of God, the nature of man, the nature of truth from what they're writing in this situation? And it's not always easy when you're looking at zoning laws, or, you know, some of the editorials that will show up in your newspaper are not dealing necessarily with issues of faith so directly, but they actually are great opportunities to see practical expressions of worldview around these different topics. And you'll be amazed as you begin to practice and become astute at analyzing these and asking questions about these things, how much actually really is evident about the way that people think, even on topics that are not considered philosophical in nature. And so I'd encourage you to begin in the opinion section of a newspaper. Pay attention to the things that you watch on television and the things that you see, maybe on the movies. I was asked to speak on worldview for a group back in Atlanta, and I was asked to incorporate some of the aspects of worldview in the media. And so I did an analysis of the movie Rush Hour. Now, I don't know if you have or haven't seen the movie Rush Hour, but there's some funny things in there to me, some things that I laughed at. And there's also some things that, as a Christian, that you would frown upon in regards to the humor and the language and those sorts of things. And many times, you know, Christians look at things only at that level of the application of people's worldview in regards to language and scenes that are inappropriate in regards to sexuality, all those types of things. But the way that I analyzed the movie Rush Hour for the purpose of this group was their underlying assumptions about the nature of authority and that what that reflected about their assumptions about the nature of God. Because in the movie Rush Hour, almost without exception, the portrayal of authority is either self-seeking, that is, using their position for personal pleasure and personal advancement, or incompetent, that is, that they're not able or capable of really doing their job in an effective way and really solving the problem, or ignorant, not even knowing what is really going on and what the problem is or that there is a problem. To have a pervasive presentation of authority in that way is a true reflection of worldview. It's a true expression of the way that people see the world, because we deal with authority issues, and authority is such a key issue. Leadership is such a key issue in regards to problem solving, that there's a clear message that's being sent out, even if it's not a self-conscious message that's being heard by those who are watching it. And so this process of growing in worldview will begin to open your eyes to judge the things around you, the media, at a whole different level than you may have before. And really, this process of growing personally in application of worldview should be a ruining process. And I like to use that word ruining in this context. You shouldn't be able to, after you've become integrated in your worldview, live the same way that you lived before you were integrated. You shouldn't be able to think the same way. You shouldn't enjoy the same things, or at least not in the same way. So there's a process where you begin to see a holistic change. It's not just a change in the way you read the newspaper, but once you start reading the newspaper that way, you start listening to music differently, or you start relating to your friends differently, those sorts of things. So as you're in that process of, you know, growing an applicational worldview, I believe that you are going to find that it's going to be pervasive. And I really want to encourage you to begin with some of those examples. Now, one of the things that you're going to find also is that it's not as cut and dry as you might like to believe in regards to making application to your worldview. I like to tell the story of the fact that when I was in junior high, I came back, no one was home at the house, and I needed to get inside my home. It was a hot day, I was thirsty, and I had forgotten my key. And I had left my key. And so I thought, well, God, I believe that you are an active God, a loving God, and that you desire the best for those that love you. And so why wouldn't you allow me to open this door, even though it's physically locked? Why wouldn't you help me to open this door just by prayer, out of my desire, because you know it's a good thing? And from a worldview point of view, those assumptions, those presuppositions about who God is by nature, I totally believe those. But how many of you know, as much as I tried to pray and shake and rattle that door locked until I got the key, I did not get inside. That was an example of, yes, this is what I believe, but as I go to apply that belief, there are other factors that are involved. And you're going to find those types of situations as well. And my encouragement is to allow those things to really challenge you on what you believe and why you believe it, and let those situations be like those questions that you don't know how to answer, that you process, you pray, you ask those who are more mature in the Lord than you, and you begin to get a deeper understanding of what those things are all about and what it is to rightly and in a wise way apply the Christian worldview. Second level that I want to talk about quickly is the relational level of applying worldview. A great example of this is when you look at Paul in Acts chapter 17. And we've talked about this earlier, I believe, as well. Paul related to people where they were at. He chose a starting point that was relevant for them as he was moving them to a place that would, again, position them for conviction versus convincing. And as we're dealing with the application of worldview relationally, just really want to, again, encourage you to that wise perspective, that perspective that is taking the other into account and is really desiring to see the other benefit from your interaction, from your application of worldview. And that is, you know, understanding the importance of their need. That is compassion without compromise. That is conviction as a goal versus simply convincing as a goal. Not that you won't have to do some things to help convince them of the validity of your point of view, but your goal is not to simply convince them, but it's to position them for conviction. Again, another way of saying it that we've talked about earlier is it's not just wanting to be right relationally, it's wanting to be righteous relationally. It's doing the right thing in a right way that produces fruit. And, you know, as you're growing relationally, one of the great ways to continue this process of growth and application of worldview is to talk with people who think differently than you. And maybe people who are more intelligent than you or older than you or with a greater life experience, those who can ask you questions that you don't know how to answer. That's a great way to grow in your relational application of worldview. For me, as I was beginning to really get into studying worldview, and as I was testing it on the college campus where I went to school, one of the greatest aspects of growth for me was not in the classroom, but it was in between classes, talking to people who were asking me questions about my beliefs and about my faith that I didn't know how to answer. I didn't grow as much answering the questions I knew how to answer, but when they asked me questions I didn't know how to answer, I would, by the grace of God, respond in a way where I could tell them, you know, I don't know how to answer that, but I'll get back to you. And it was in that process of discovering the answer that I really grew in my understanding of worldview and became far more integrated than I was before. And so once you've come to a place where, you know, you're integrated enough in your worldview that those questions are not going to shipwreck your faith, it's simply dealing with things at an evidential or an applicational level that you're not skillful at dealing with those questions yet, but at a presuppositional level, once you're solid enough to engage in those type of conversations, I'd encourage you to venture out incrementally. That is, a little bit at a time. Don't go seeking necessarily the most challenging person, but yeah, don't shy away from maybe challenging conversations, because it's a great opportunity. It's a great way to grow relationally. For the sake of time, we're going to move forward. The last area of application worldview that I want to talk about is societal. That is societal, dealing with the culture around us, our city, the larger perspective. And when we're talking about this, obviously we're talking about not just as individuals, but as Christians. What are our answers to the problems that we face in the world around us? The terminology might be different, but I don't think that anyone would disagree that we live in a fallen world. That is, a world that does not reflect perfection or utopia or those sorts of things. Really, most any religion that has any type of social consciousness prescribes their answer to our problem of the fallen world around us and how we go to a place of utopia, whether it's the Marxist perspective of social and economic determinism, the materialist perspective and Darwinism and those sorts of things, the humanist perspectives. And I say perspectives because there's several humanist perspectives, but they all go back to the basic goodness of man, and that if we can just unlock the basic goodness of man, that we will find ourselves living in a world without the problems that we obviously have. All these worldviews and other expressions of religious faith deal with how do we apply these faith choices in a way that are going to bring change to the world around us. And Christianity is no different. And again, the basic concepts that we've talked about to this point are very important here in regards to worldview. We need to be wise in the way that we apply these things. We need to be righteous and not just right in the way that we apply these things. To me, a great example is the homeless issue. We are going to be, if we haven't already, later on in this series, talking about spheres of government or jurisdictions, which is an important aspect of understanding worldview. That is, how different areas of life interact with one another according to the biblical presuppositions and the biblical perspective. How has God created man to function socially and in his different social capacities, that is, family or church or business, or civilly, that is, in our governments and those sorts of things. And in the context of growing in our Christian worldview regarding these issues, one of the things that you'll see is that the care of the homeless, for example, and those who are needy in that way was never meant to be done by the state. Biblically, that's something that falls under the provision, under the responsibility of the family and the church, beginning actually with the individual, but then with the family and the church in terms of responding to an individual who's in that place. And as Christians, we can be those who come to that right biblical understanding and say it's wrong for the government to give out money in this way. And biblically, it is wrong. That's not the way that God intended it. But as we're prescribing an application of our worldview, how we prescribe that and what's a wise way to prescribe that is very important. The truth is, if we just had the power and the authority to tomorrow say, all right, there's no more money that's going out from state and federal agencies to help those who are needy, unfortunately, numbers of people would die. Numbers of people would suffer because our family units and our churches are not capable, we're not mature enough, we're not ready at this point to deal with the level of need that there is around us. And without compromise, but with compassion, we need to look at wise ways to incrementally, that is step by step, move towards the fully biblical application, but at the same time realize that that type of a cut and dry application in that type of a situation probably doesn't reflect God's heart for how we would go about problem solving in that way. I think I would challenge you to look at Matthew chapter 13. And again, you want to take these scriptures in context, but it's an interesting reflection of the way that Jesus is thinking here when he talks about the fact that in the parable of the tares among the wheat, and that's found in verses 24 through 30 in terms of the parable itself, that when the tares are sown among the wheat and the disciples bring that, or the slaves bring that to the landowner, they ask, should we go out and gather them up? And in verse 29, he says, no, don't gather them up, lest while you gather up the tares, you may root up the wheat with them. That is, there's a concern for the wheat. It's not just removing what's wrong, but there's a concern for protecting that which is valuable. And again, without taking out of context these scriptures, I would challenge you with that principle of a wise application of worldview, whereas we know where we're supposed to be and where we're supposed to go, but instead of trying to make a 90-degree turn in a way that would cause a lot of damage, we need to seek God for wise ways that without compromise, we can compassionately move in that direction in a way that's going to serve people. And it's at the social application of Christian worldview that you'll find many debates today in the body of Christ. And we need more voices, more informed voices in these debates. And I would encourage you not to shy away from them, but to really engage them as a learner. Engage them not as someone who has all the right answers, but as someone who is seeking to grow so that you can not only respond in a right way, but in a righteous way. And as we're bringing this to a close, I just want to again challenge you and call you to a vision of becoming a prophetic voice to your culture. That is someone who is going to be an influence of another perspective, of another way of living, that you would not be a product of your culture as so many are, but that you would be one who really is a voice, who really is salt and light to the world around you. And in regards to that, you're going to need to get counsel from wise men and women. You're going to need to be open to investing yourself, investing time in training and in growth and in wrestling with these issues. It's going to take, before you're ready, just to jump out and solve all these problems. It's going to take testing. It's going to take, again, the formation of a skill in doing this. But I believe that God's called us to nothing else, and that even in the fulfilling of the Great Commission, the going forth and making disciples and teaching what things Jesus has commanded, that requires an integrated Christian worldview, and it requires a desire to use that worldview in a way that influences the world around us, both the individuals as well as the social structures around us, to operate according to biblical principle, that we could be faithful in our generation to present a godly example, that the gospel would not only be preached in word, but in witness, so that people would see the evidence of the glory of God in the world around them. That is my call to you. That is my challenge to you. And as we're finishing this look at the different levels of worldview, I would just encourage you to take that motivation into your heart and to continue to wrestle with worldview at the presuppositional level, at the evidential level, and at the applicational level. God bless you as you continue your journey.
This is a copyrighted program of Strategic Christian Services, Santa Rosa, California. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. Strategic Christian Services offers a wide variety of other educational materials and training schools designed to help you live life to its fullest. For more information on our products and services, please call us at 1-800-700-0605. Join us online at www.gostrategic.org or write to us at Post Office Box 2709, Santa Rosa, California, 95405.